Hi, this is Cynthia Davis. You're about to hear one of our racier shows. We don't normally talk about sex, but when dealing with the family, how can we avoid it? Promiscuity is infiltrating our homes, our TV shows, and our churches. Have we allowed our children's minds to be molested in their sex ed classes? In this edition of Homefront, Pam Stenzel explains what effect our sex-saturated culture is having on the next generation. Welcome to Homefront on Missouri Grassroots Radio. I'm Cynthia Davis, your host. As a writer, speaker, and former legislator, we discuss limiting government, fiscal responsibility, and fair taxation. I'm a mother of seven and a wife of one for over three decades, so I bring you my personal experience. And now it's time for Homefront with Cynthia Davis. Today we have an extra special guest, Pam Stenzel. 7 years ago, Pam Stenzel grew weary of hearing the phrase, "Nobody told me." So after years of counseling young girls who found themselves in crisis pregnancies, Pam began to realize that so many were completely unaware of the risks involved with sexual activity, and that had never been told about the consequences of their choices. Pam is a well-known speaker, author, writer. I invite you to help me welcome our well-known author, speaker, and writer today, Pam Stenzel. Thank you, Pam, for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Cynthia. It's a privilege.
Well, we are so excited about your message about Nobody Told Me. In fact, I'm holding your book in my hand, Nobody Told Me. And I do feel sorry for the generation today. They are trying very hard to navigate through the world, trying to understand. You know, here's what the problem is I see it as a parent. By the way, Pam, do you have kids?
I do, and they're all grown now. I have a daughter that's 27 and married and teaches first grade. I have a son that's 26, and my baby is 19.
Yeah, that's a wonderful time to be able to say they're all grown now. But
that's right.
There are a lot of parents who are in the middle of the cultural morass out there, and I am one. I feel sorry for not only the children, but I feel sorry for the parents, because what they're learning in public schools is not helping them. What kids are learning from the culture, from TV, and what they're not learning from their church, if their parents even take them to church, is part of what the problem is. It is the primary duty of parents to teach their children what's going on.
You're exactly right. We're in such a difficult age, and I even say, with my older two being very close together, now 27 and 26, and then my youngest son is now 19. I had about an 8-year span in there. And the difference between raising my older two compared to my youngest was night and day with technology. And a lot of this is the technological advancement has really caused this, trying to keep up with what their kids are being exposed to. And you know, so you obviously you have school, you have culture, but now we've got, you know, we used to, this will age me a little bit, but when I was raising my kids, it was like, don't let your kids have a computer in their room. It should be in a public place, and you should put all these filters on it, and you should be able to go past it and see what your kids are doing online. Well, the reality is when you hand your kid a smartphone, they now have a computer on their phone. And all of your, you know, all of the things that you thought you were able to control and see, you can't. And so technology has caused it to be extremely difficult to parent students today and to really keep on top of what they're doing, and especially their online presence. And you know, all of this Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and Snapchat and whatever else new thing is going to come down the tube next week is making it extremely hard on parents. And so let me give parents a break here. It is difficult. But I think the most important thing is that we are required to be the ones to teach and speak values to our children, regardless of what technology we're trying to deal with. And the values don't change just because technology changes. And And, you know, I'll tell you, since the beginning of time, teenagers have rolled their eyes at parents, I'm sure, and said, you've told me a million times. And one of the things I say to parents today, if your teenager has not recently said that to you, has not rolled their eyes at you and said, oh, Mom, you know, you've told me a million times, you're not talking enough. That's my paycheck. I am going to be so... I want my kids to hear my voice every time, or the voice of the Holy Spirit, which that sounds like me, when they're watching TV, when they're looking at something, thinking, oh my goodness, what would my mom say about that? And the reality is, if we haven't said that when we've seen Miley Cyrus on the Grammys, then our kids don't know what our, you know, what our opinion is, and we aren't helping them to navigate what they're being exposed to. And, you know, I've spent a lot of years working with pregnant teen girls, and this is really what this came from, you know, having girls coming into my counseling office for pregnancy tests in my pregnancy center, and a lot of them, their tests were negative. They weren't pregnant. And then they're ready to bolt out my door. And I'm like, wait a minute, you're not done here. You need a pap smear, blood test. You know, have you been tested for syphilis, gonorrhea, herpes, chlamydia, trichinomas, vulvodynia, arthritis, hepatitis C, hepatitis C, HPV? And these girls look at me like I have three heads. Like me, you know, I would need to be tested for that. You're in my office thinking you could be pregnant, and you have no idea that you could have an STD. And the reality is, our teenagers are not being told the truth about their sexuality. They're not being told the truth about the consequences, and they're not being told the truth, about what it means to save sex for marriage. And anytime we give them the value, they act like, well, you're just old-fashioned and you're part of an old generation and you don't get it. Everybody's doing it now. And as parents, we need to be speaking truth into the lives of our kids so that they can, you know, understand and see the lie.
I think our culture has taught the girls that getting pregnant is far worse than getting an STD. You can fix your sexually transmitted disease by taking a pill. A pregnancy is way more complicated and way more expensive. So they've had a skewed view of what is good and bad, that getting...
Well, and both of those things are a complete lie. By the way, over 30% of the major STDs we're dealing with today are incurable, which means you get it, you've got it for life. And every virus is incurable. So that would be herpes, HPV, HIV, hepatitis. Once you're infected forever. Now, we can give you some medication to help you deal with the chronic infection, but you will forever be infected, and you can then infect others. Other STDs, even when we can cure them, the non-viral STDs like chlamydia and gonorrhea, they still leave scarring. Chlamydia is one of the major causes of infertility among women. So are we telling our girls, do they fully understand that the decision they make on prom night might mean they will never be able to have children?
Right.
And, you know, the reality is our culture doesn't care about that 16-year-old when she's 26. They care about her when she's 16. They're like, just don't get pregnant. Whatever you do, don't get pregnant. We don't care if you're sterile and dealing with herpes and chronic STD infection. What we care about is that you don't get pregnant. And so then the reality is, the sad thing, Cynthia, for me is I get it that the world is that way because they've made pregnancy a disease and they've made disease no big deal. And the reality is it's completely opposite. Pregnancy is natural. It was what it was intended to do. Now, you should wait for marriage and so that two parents, you know, this child can be raised in a home with two parents. We all know the economic, spiritual, and social ramifications of single parenting. But the reality is your body having a child was natural and what God intended it to do. Herpes, HIV, HPV are not natural. These are, in fact, infections that are chronic diseases and can damage you long term. And the other thing our kids aren't hearing, our girls aren't hearing, and if I could just try to drill this when I speak to students across the country, girls will always pay the higher price. The score isn't even. Of the major, the 30 major STIs we're dealing with, 26 of them primarily damage women. Does this teenage girl understand that when this boy is pressuring her to do something she's not sure or even wondering whether she should do or not, that she is putting everything on the line and he's really not risking as much? And you know, I think the feminist movement tried so hard to make, to say, you know, we're equal, equality, as if men and women are the same. We are not the same. We are extremely different, not just physiologically. We're different in our brains, and we're different in the way we approach relationships. And different doesn't mean less than. It just means different. And when we have a culture that wants to just negate differences between men and women, what ends up happening is our girls end up bearing the big price.
I want to tell you the story of my child. I have 3 daughters and 4 sons. I sent one of my daughters to a Catholic high school. What surprised me the most is you would think that a Catholic high school where the classes were segregated, they had only boys in classes and only girls in classes, the kind of parents who would send their children there, you would think, would be adherent to what the Catholic Church teaches. But I remember the day my daughter came home and told me that one of her friend's mothers took her to the doctor to get on the pill. To me, that seems like child abuse because you're planning that somebody's going to molest your daughter. I don't understand what kind of thinking parent would say that's okay, and even to the point of enabling the child to engage in that behavior. Have you seen that happen among your Catholic friends?
Yes, I would say public school is about 40% of the schools that I speak in. Catholic schools would be another probably 50%, and 10% would be other, evangelical, Lutheran, Protestant, whatever. So literally, I'm probably right now in more Catholic high schools than any other type of school. And as I travel, not only the United States, but Canada as well, the girls that I talk to, and I get a chance to talk to a lot of them personally, and then most of them will email me or Facebook message me or Twitter me, but I get a lot of feedback from these girls. One of the things they always ask about is so many mothers are finding out their girls are sexually active, and the sad thing with some of these girls, it was even before they became sexually active, the mothers are encouraging them to go on birth control. Well, the problem is this. Birth actually increases their risk of STI infection by about 10 times, depending on what hormone they're using. If it's Depo-Provera, it's 10 times. That's a horrible form of hormonal birth control. Depo actually literally shuts this girl's system down, like chemically puts her into menopause. So just as your body is learning to menstruate, which is completely what it should be doing, and to cycle, we are chemically shutting that cycle off. And it's just horribly damaging. And it changes the surface of their cervix, which is the primary place in which infection is taking place. And so the infertility among these young girls who were put on any form of hormonal birth control as young teens especially, and then taking it over usually a decade, is going to be absolutely atrocious. And these girls are eventually going to go back and say, Mom, why did you allow this to happen? But when I tell the girls, hey, you are now increasing your risk of infection. Not only does birth control not protect you from STI infection, you've increased your risk of being infected by taking hormonal birth control. They look at me like, well, how can that possibly be, and why didn't anyone tell them? Well, no one tells them because, once again, the medical community and even their mothers are not worried about STI infection. They're worried about pregnancy. And why, as a mother, would I be worried about my teen girl getting pregnant and not caring whether or not she gets herpes? Well, probably because if she gets herpes, the whole world doesn't know. That can be kept a secret. A pregnancy, an unplanned pregnancy, can typically not be kept a secret. And so then everybody's going to know. And here's the other, to me, just the frustrating thing, is that the medical community has begun this little campaign saying, well, hey, if you want, you know, better skin and less acne and less painful periods, then you should be on the pill, or you should get on Depo. And so many of the girls I talk to say, well, I'm not on the birth control because of pregnancy. I'm not having sex, or they try and tell me they're not having sex, or they're not on it for pregnancy prevention. They're on it for their skin. I'm taking it for my skin, and I have really painful periods, and I have to regulate my periods. And this is insane. I'm like, how prior to 1960s did any woman, thousands of years before this, ever deal with acne and painful periods before we had the pill? This is insane. But I look at the girl and I say this, all right, well, if you're on the pill or you're taking Depo, you can't have sex. You cannot have sex while you're on the pill or taking Depo. And then all of a sudden, Cynthia, their face looks at me like, what? And I'm like, why would that face be happening to me if they were not having sex? One of the girls at a Catholic high school I was speaking at, who I spoke privately with, told me that she was on the pill for acne, did the same thing. I said, well, you can't have sex. Then she got a little shocked. And I asked her to tell me about why she got on the pill. And she said, I got on the pill because my doctor told me it was for my acne and my painful period. And I stopped her and I said, were you sexually active prior to being on the pill? And she told me no. And then I looked at her and I said, are you sexually active now? And I saw her eyes wonder whether she'd lie to me and then thought better of it. And she said yes. And, you know, the sad thing is, whatever the doctors told her, whatever their mother thought, that girl was not making a choice to have sex when she was not on the pill. But the minute she got on the pill, for whatever medical reason they tried to give for her to do it, she became sexually active. And now she is at risk, not only emotionally and spiritually, but physically as well. And why parents are doing this is beyond my understanding.
Well, let's talk about the medical community for 1 minute, because I took my daughter when she was 15 to a pediatrician just for an annual checkup because, well, she had to have the physical to get into the Catholic high school.
Yeah.
During the checkup, the doctor asked me to step out of the room. I complied, but afterwards I asked my daughter what happened after I left. And she said the doctor asked her if she was having sex with anyone, thinking she would tell a total stranger in the medical community her private details, things she would never even tell her own mother. So that definitely undermines the family, the position I have in her life, and assumes that she's going to be keeping secrets from her mother, and then the doctor let her know, if whenever you decide to have sex, come see me and I'll make sure I write you a prescription for something. Now, I find that incredibly offensive, and that just is indicative of what is going on in our society. So we don't have a lot of support from the home. It's to the point where the medical doctors are expecting that children don't talk to their parents anymore. I was in the Missouri State Legislature for 8 years, and during that time, I wanted to file a bill that would block doctors from prescribing drugs to minors without parental consent, because that, at its core, is a violation of the parent-child relationship. Originally, I felt it was inappropriate for a doctor to be giving any drug to any minor when the parents are clearly responsible until the child is no longer a minor.
Right.
I was told by the attorney who was trying to help me draft the bill that because of a Supreme Court case, we cannot do that when it comes to birth control, because the minor has a right to have reproductive freedom in America, in all states, and that means for me to block my child from taking birth control would be equivalent to me robbing her of her constitutional rights. How did we get so badly messed up?
This is the thing. Roe versus Wade, and I'm sure he's referring to that decision, because I can't imagine, and all decisions that came under that, when the courts ruled that women had a constitutional right to an abortion. This is where all of this has come from. And the reality is, this is why we're not only fighting this in the United States, but we're fighting this at the UN with what they call child rights. And the reproductive freedom and rights to have sex with whomever, whatever, at whatever age, are being pushed through not only our legislatures and obviously our Supreme Court, but also internationally. And it absolutely blows the mind that really your daughter can't receive Tylenol at school from a nurse, but she can be given the birth control pill. She can be given the morning after pill. She can be given RU486. As many of your listeners might know, recently there's been some fights that they wanted girls as young as 12 to be able to go to any drugstore, to go to Walgreens, CVS, Rite Aid, and pick up the morning after pill with right over the counter without parental notification. Right now, you can do it if, I think it's 17. The reality is now your daughter at 13, 12 years old could go to Walgreens and buy this basically overdose of birth control, which is a level 3 carcinogenic, I think, or carcinogenic. It's an unbelievable drug, and get it without your knowing at all. Your daughter in many states can go have an abortion without your permission or knowing as well. Some states have put parental notification laws in, but those are hard to even deal with. So the reality is, this is the one issue which doesn't make sense. And I mean, why could my daughter not get a Tylenol, but she can get an abortion without me knowing? She can get birth control, Depo-Provera, the morning after pill, RU486. And parents have no right to know. I mean, it's absurd. But, you know, here's the other thing I've said to parents. If your daughter ends up with cervical cancer and now needs a hysterectomy, you will be paying for it, you realize. When all of these things fail to help your daughter and she ends up with more medical issues, you will be the one being required to come in and pay for all of the consequences of all of these things. You know, if your daughter has a botched abortion and you didn't know about it and she ends up in ER because of bleeding, and you know, you're the one who's going to have to deal with that. And that's really sadly what I've seen. I had one little girl at 16 years old who went without her parents' knowledge in to have a D&E abortion at 19 weeks, and the abortionist perforated her uterus, grabbed a hold of part of her bowel, and literally yanked it through her vagina. She was bleeding to death, rushed to trauma, ended up with a colostomy as well as a complete hysterectomy. Guess who had to deal with the aftermath of the problem that they had no right to even know their daughter was undergoing the procedure? I mean, this is absolutely unacceptable, and the fact that parents have no right, you know, or to say anything is, again, it's the state coming in between parents and children, and that is not what God intended. It certainly doesn't help children. I love teenagers, and I'm a counselor by profession. I'm a psychologist by profession. I love teenagers. But, Cynthia, there are three children on the face of this earth that I love to distraction. They're mine. And no matter how much I love students, I don't love your kids the way you do. And it's not acceptable for doctors, for teachers, for psychologists to come in between parents and their children.
And even though it looks bad now, it's not like it suddenly got bad. I think about when I was in high school back in the 1970s. I had a guidance counselor, and I remembered going to my counselor and asking her one day, what is okay to do sexually? I mean, where is the line? How do I know what's right and wrong? These are her exact words. She said, as long as you can look at yourself in the mirror the next day.
Oh, my goodness. Seriously.
That's not a good test, because first of all, you don't find out till the next day when you look in the mirror. And second of all, you know, you're talking to teenagers. How are they going to have the maturity to know what is going to make them feel good when they look in the mirror if the adults in charge don't tell them? So in my own struggle for right and wrong and trying to find truth, I couldn't find anybody who could give me a definitive answer in my public school setting. And then I remember my film class, we got English credit for that, and I happened to sign up for the same class as my boyfriend. Well, one day we were watching a film, and the teacher turned off the lights, and we were sitting next to each other like we always did, and he wanted to kiss me. He figured the lights are off. This is a perfect opportunity. And, you know, after the class got over, she asked to speak to us. She asked, Miss Gosh and Mr. Davis, please stay after the class. So we did, and we walked up to her desk, and she just said, don't do that anymore. And I look back on it with my now 54-year-old lens, and I'm seeing that and thinking, was that teacher nuts? If I were teaching the class, I would have turned the lights back on, stopped the movie, and said, okay, we're going to straighten something out right here. You sit in one corner and you sit in the other corner. That's not going to happen in my classroom. What is wrong with these adults in charge that they're accepting this level of physical involvement as if it's normal? When did we turn a corner to where that became acceptable and accepted?
You know, my generation of parents too, Cynthia, are not parenting the way I was parented. I don't know. I had wonderful parents, and I don't remember one minute in my teenage years where my mother cared whether or not I liked her. Ever. It was not a popularity contest. She was my mother, but this generation, my generation of mothers, are so worried about being their kid's friend. And I think this also has gone over into the teaching and any form of authority. And here's the problem. We were raised in the me generation in the 70s and 80s, where it was self-esteem. Oh, me, me. It was all about me, me, me. And we've become the most selfish generation of adults. everything is about me. How is it going to make me feel? What if the person doesn't like me? What if I, you know, everything isn't, I need to do what's best for you because it's best for you whether you like me or not. It's all about me. And then the other problem, this perfect storm here, is the greatest virtue in our culture is tolerance. That is the greatest virtue. So none of us feel it's okay for us to make any judgment call on anyone else's behavior. So a teacher today would feel like, I personally can't tell that child that they can't make out in my classroom because I might not do it and I might personally think it's not a good idea, but I don't think I should tell them what's appropriate or inappropriate.
Well,
I mean, the reality is one of the reasons I'm not speaking in public schools as much right now as I did even 8 to 10 years ago is because we have utterly as a culture rejected the abstinence message because we've said it's morality. And the sad thing is, even though there is a moral, obviously there's a moral reason to wait for marriage from a faith perspective, but the reality is abstinence, monogamy, one partner who's only been with you, is the only medically safe way to have sex. And the science proves that. So take all your morality out. Having sex with multiple partners is dangerous. But we're not allowed to say that to kids now because it might not gel with their personal worldview. It's insane.
Hi, friends. Do you like what you're hearing? Then go to my website. It's CynthiaDavis.net and sign up for my newsletter. You'll get all this information and more when you sign up for my email reminding you of when you'll hear another podcast and letting you know what's coming up next. Besides, we always have a little bit of humor at the end, so go to CynthiaDavis.net and stay in the loop. For those of you who don't like email, go to my Facebook page. It's called Homefront with Cynthia Davis. And make sure you click the like button. That way, you'll have a convenient way to see what we're doing and to get the word when another podcast is released. That's Homefront with Cynthia Davis on Facebook. My website is CynthiaDavis.net. That's where we keep all our good stuff. So if you want to get our newsletter and find more podcasts, go to CynthiaDavis.net. Hey, let's stay in touch. Planned Parenthood and other abortion providers have really done a lot of harm to children today. While I was in the legislature, I filed a bill that said abortion providers cannot be in the classroom teaching the sex ed class. It amazed me how many people pushed back from that and thought, well, they're more knowledgeable than any other school teacher. In Missouri, as in most other states, there's a law that says if you're going to teach sex ed, you have to teach all the forms of contraception. Well, that could take a year right there because there's so many. And all it does is teach children how to be promiscuous because you're focusing on, okay, kids, there's something that we know you're not supposed to do, but you all really are going to do it, wink, wink. And since we know you're really going to do it anyway, and you're going to do it because it's just so much fun, and everybody else does it, and if you don't do it, you're really going to miss out on all the fun. But other than that, because we know that a percentage of you are going to do it, wink, wink, we want you to know what you need to know. Well, when I filed the bill saying that they don't have to have that mandate of teaching all forms of contraception, I got pushback from the teachers. I got people complaining, well, then they'll all get pregnant, and well, how are we going to pay for all of this? And it surprised me that the opposition was bipartisan. I had people from both the Democrat and the Republican Party hate my bill, and it just shocked me that surely people can't see what harm this is doing to the mentality. I brought up the idea with my senator because I wanted him to support me, and he liked the idea. His exact words were this, you know, I think you're right, Cynthia, because I never even thought about sex until they taught the class. Then he said, I haven't been able to think about anything else ever since.
Oh, God. Well, Cindy, here's the problem with the discussion when we simplify it. When we just say, well, we have to teach all forms of birth control. The problem is they're not. People who call themselves comprehensive sex educators are not teaching. They're not even giving the basic information kids would need to know. Here's the deal. I only speak, when I come into a school, I speak for an hour, and I handle almost the majority of forms of birth control, condoms and Depo and hormonal birth control pills. And I deal with abortion, by the way. So I have dealt with all of those things. And you know, I don't get into details of, you know, cervical caps and other forms of those kind of things. But the reality is the main forms of birth control that our kids are going to run into, I talk about. The difference is this. I tell them the truth about those forms of birth control. First of all, a condom is not safe. And the process of using a condom consistently and correctly every single time, I don't know if your listeners would know this, but there is a 13-step process to using a condom properly. And part of the process actually includes doing a genital check on your partner. And the reality is none of these kids, how long did it take you to teach your kid to brush their teeth and expect them to do it consistently and correctly every single time? This is insane. So condoms, the failure rate for a condom for pregnancy for teenagers is upwards of 22%. You only half the population can get pregnant only about 72 hours out of any given month. 100% of the population can get an STI 100% of the time. There is no way a condom is effective or will protect them from an STD over any length of time. And again, when they teach birth control, do they tell the girls that they have now increased their risk of STI infection, that the birth control pill does not protect them? Do they tell them that the birth control pill can cause infertility later in life, that it can do all? They don't tell them any of that. So my beef with what's being taught our kids isn't just this simple, should they be taught about contraception or not. They should be told the truth. They should be told the truth. And the reality is they are not being told the truth. They are being given a lie. And it's this argument and this discussion is not as simple as should they be taught just abstinence or should they be taught birth control and other forms. The issue is they should be taught the truth. And the truth is that the only way they can protect themselves from an unplanned pregnancy or an STI infection physically is to not have sex. The only way to protect themselves long-term from an STI is to have sex with one partner who has only been with them. Monogamy does not mean one at a time. That is one partner who has only been with you. Stay faithful to that partner throughout your life. The only way to protect yourself emotionally would be the same. Everything else that you do is putting a Band-Aid or trying to fix the problem. So politically, the better argument when we start to talk about what we're teaching our kids in school is to not use the old terminology, because the old terminology has killed us, and it's because the language has killed us. This abstinent only compared to comprehensive sex education is a lie in and of itself, because abstinence only is never abstinence only. It's always what is the best choice for you, and it always includes a discussion of not only the birth control method, but their failure rate and what they can and cannot do. And comprehensive sex education is anything but comprehensive. It is narrow-minded. You're all going to do it anyway, so here are all these different options you have to protect yourself. And by the way, when those options don't work, here's where you can get an abortion. That's comprehensive. Never deals with the emotions, never deals with relationships, never gives them boundaries to help them say no to sex if that's what they choose to do. It is literally a class about birth control and abortion. And so it's anything but comprehensive. So the better terminology to use if you're approaching your school district, especially in a, and I would do it on faith-based or otherwise, is are you teaching sexual risk avoidance or are you teaching sexual risk reduction? And birth control, condoms, and comprehensive sex education is sexual risk reduction. You merely somewhat reduce the risk for some things, but you cannot avoid it. The only proper education for our kids is sexual risk avoidance. And when and that terminology, I think, helps us politically get away from the pitfalls of using terms like abstinence only, and even abstinence, by the way, or comprehensive sex education.
So do you believe that the problem is we don't teach marriage education?
We don't teach relationship education, is the reality. We don't teach healthy relationships at all, much less marriage. So the reality, you know, the deal is when you teach, hey, anything goes, you can do whatever you want, and just make sure you have a piece of latex or get on this drug, you're preparing the kids for infidelity, you're preparing them for divorce, and you're putting there's actually no boundary on sexuality. And one of the things that I try and remind kids is, the behavior that you were doing prior to marriage is probably what you're going to do after. So if you had no boundary for sex before you got married, a few little words in a church or on a beach somewhere aren't going to change that. Your boundary for sex has nothing to do with commitment. Your boundary for sex has to do with whoever you really like a lot at any given moment. And anybody who's been married for more than 10 minutes knows that that's not going to be the person you're married to for a very long time. So my commitment to sexuality and chastity has to be based on a commitment, something outside of myself, not my feelings or emotions. And so that's something we're not teaching kids. The other thing, we're not talking to them about, you know, we could go into a really lot of detail, and in my programs with kids, I try to do it quickly because I don't have the amount of time, but a lot of our sexual risk avoidance programs are doing it a lot more extensively. We have learned so much about how we bond with our brains and how much the neurotransmitters in our brains assist us with bonding and attachment. And one of the things that we found out is that male and female brains are as different as the rest of their bodies. And the primary neurotransmitter responsible for bonding in a female brain is a neurotransmitter called oxytocin. And oxytocin helps with attachment, but oxytocin also says to a female, trust, you know, when it's released in the brain. And oxytocin is released four different times in a woman's brain. The first is with a lot of hugging. When I teach this to teenagers, I try to explain them, not like, hey, we haven't seen each other, you're a good friend, hug. I mean, a lot of hugging. So hugging extensively, it can release oxytocin, and that bond you to that person you're hugging. It doesn't require orgasm. Orgasm will be the next time where oxytocin is released and bond you chemically in the brain to that person. And then for females, it also happens right at the onset of labor, and then while you're nursing your baby, which are amazing bonding tools to bond you to this new human being coming into your life. But what we haven't explained to our girls is that if girls start hugging extensively a certain boy, all of a sudden she thinks he's the greatest thing ever. And I tell teenagers this, you know, you have a friend and she's dating this guy, and we can all see that he's an idiot, but for some reason she just can't see it. And I say, just walk up to her and go, oxytocin. The oxytocin in her brain has caused her to believe that this is an okay mate and this is an okay person and she can trust him, when that might not be the case. It could be this neurotransmitter. And so, you know, giving our kids, why are our sex education, why isn't Planned Parenthood teaching this? Well, it goes against everything they want. They want sex without boundaries, so that they can make money off of the end results of that. And this science doesn't work with their system, because they would be telling girls to be careful who they're hugging. But most psychologists who studied neurotransmitters and understand attachment and bonding would look at a young girl and say, be really careful who you hug. I mean, this is one of the examples why we have women who are in physically abusive relationships who do not leave, because they are brain chemically bonded to even this abuser.
Do the men have an equivalent neurotransmitter?
Males, yeah, the male primary neurotransmitter is called vasopressin, and it is primarily at orgasm. But the problem is, when you have a young man who is involved in pornography and who is and thus involved in masturbating, and orgasm is happening with an image, then he becomes bonded to an image. And when that image changes over and over and over again, it loses its attachment. The same as having multiple partners. You lose your ability to attach. So I've been telling some businessmen, when Tiger Woods, it was all, you know, on the news that he had been unfaithful to his wife, and they said, well, he's going into treatment. everybody kind of laughed. Now everybody's going to treatment for their sexual addiction problem. But the reality is that there are companies, pharmaceutical companies, who are trying to figure out how we can artificially insert vasopressin into a male's brain and only have him view his wife to the point where we can rebuild that attachment that's been destroyed. And I'm going to tell you right now, Cynthia, if I find out the pharmaceutical company that can pull that off, I need to invest in it now, because it's going to be worth more than Viagra ever was. Because there's going to be so much money. Because they believe they can chemically fix this attachment problem. Well, the reality is, that was God's idea. God created this ability for a man to attach to his wife in such a way that would make them more monogamous with this vasopressin. But when it's abused via pornography or via multiple partner sex, they lose their ability to bond. And that's something that should be told to our young men. They need to understand that pornography is not victimless. There will be consequences to that activity, and when you're raising sons, it's so difficult, because now the pornography is not just on a magazine at a street corner that they have to find a way to buy, or just on their computer. It's on their gaming consoles, it's on their PlayStations, their Xboxes, it's on their smartphones, it's everywhere they go. And so how, you know, to train up a young man to honor his future wife and honor his ability to bond and carry on a monogamous relationship can be very difficult.
Even if you're watching professional football and they pan to the cheerleaders, and what are they wearing? It's supposed to be like 30 degrees outside, and they're acting like they're in the Bahamas and it's 95 and exposing everything. That even is offensive to me.
Right. And, you know, part of that comes from a culture that now for years has said that women's value is merely sexual attraction. In other words, I have no value as a woman if I am not sexually attractive. And you know what is so sad about that is that 40 years past what was supposed to be a feminist movement that uplifted women, we have thrown this generation of young girls in the gutter. And the feminist movement per se has not uplifted women. They've only screamed that they should have an abortion and that our value comes with our sexuality. Here's the reality. I have value based on who I am as a human being. First of all, that I was created in the image of God. And my value is far greater than my weight, than whether I'm sexually attractive, than any of those things. It was so difficult as a mother to raise a daughter in this culture and say, you have intrinsic value because God created you, and he created you female, and you are beautiful, and you don't have to, you know, live up to society's idea of what makes you valuable. But I look around at teenagers, especially young girls today, and with people like Miley Cyrus being the one they look up to, it's just so, so sad that they have fallen into this whole lie of the culture that says if they're not attractive to men, they don't have value. And you know, we've done it to this generation of our girls. It's, you know, the cutting, the eating disorders, the depression that we're dealing with our young girls is solely a result of teaching them that their value is merely based on their sexuality.
I have a daughter who's going to be getting married in a couple months, and it really opened my eyes just trying to shop for a wedding dress. Most of the wedding dresses today are topless, and it's offensive. I'm like, you know what? You don't want something where your shoulders are completely bare with nothing on them. It is actually very hard to find a wedding dress that's modest nowadays.
Yeah, well, and everything. Well, you've been dealing with this with prom dresses. We're dealing with, you know, I talk to priests now who deal with this with what girls are wearing to communion and, you know, in their school. It's like, have some semblance of modesty in God's house and in front of the sacrament. And it just, again, we have just fallen hook, line, and sinker for our culture. My unbelievably godly grandfather, father of 12, grandfather of 87 of us, Cynthia, an amazing godly man, taught me a poem when I was little, and I'll never forget it. It went like this: vice is a monster of so fearful a mien as to be hated upon merely being seen, but seen too oft, familiar with its faces, one first endures, then fondles, then embraces. And that is what has happened to our culture. You know, 30 years ago, we may have been shocked at things that today we look at and go, it's just the way it is. And the media and our culture has thrown it in our faces in every possible way so that they can desensitize us to the immorality and make us believe that it's just really not that big of a deal and everybody's doing it and the fight isn't worth it. And you know what? No matter how old-fashioned, I'm sure when you were in the legislature in Missouri, everyone thought you were like the most old-fashioned, crazy human being. I get it all the time. You know, you're living in a different era. Wake up. And then, and the sad thing is, Cynthia, I'm getting this from people who should be on our side in fighting the battle. You know what, Pam? It's too hard. It's too big. We can't win. This Goliath is, you know, you're just one small person, and there's no way you can make a difference. And, you know, I continue to remind, begging everyone who's listening, and I remind myself of this. First of all, when I wake up in the morning, the first thing in my morning prayers I remind myself is, and I say out loud, I am not the Messiah. Jesus is. It's not my job to heal, save, fix. I'm only called to speak the truth. That's all I'm called to do. And when I've done that, I've finished my job. But the more important quote that I try to always remember is a quote by Mother Teresa, who said this: God has not called us to be successful. He's called us to be faithful. And I'm not expected to win this battle. I'm expected to fight it. That's all. God's responsible for the winning. God's responsible for the success or the failure. That has nothing to do with me. I'm responsible to fight the battle. And I'm not allowed to give up just because it doesn't seem I might not be able to win. I'm supposed to do what God called me to do. And you know, it's true for parents too, because so many parents will say, when I talk about having boundaries and not allowing your kids to date and making sure they're, you know, wearing clothes that are appropriate and all the things we've talked about, kids will say, well, Pam, or parents will say to me, well, Pam, you're strict. Your rules are so strict, your kids are going to rebel. So, what was that? What did you all do? Have a powwow with your teenager and ask what rules they were planning to obey and then have those rules so you could feel like a good parent? That's insane. I'm the parent. I make the rules. And here's the reality. I will never stand before God and answer for what my children choose to do. I will stand before God and answer for what I did, for how I taught, for the values I not only taught but lived in my home. I will answer to God for me. I'm not going to answer for them. So it's not an excuse for parents to say, I can't have that rule because my kid won't obey it. That's not the issue. The issue is you should be passing down your faith and your values and having the standards and the boundaries, because that's what God's called you to do. What they choose to do with it is up to them.
That's good. Have you seen any trend that we need to know about? Are we getting better or worse?
Here's the trend that I've been seeing, and I've been seeing it over the last decade. Teenagers today, young adults, are kind of, there's no gray area. Cynthia, when you and I were growing up, there was a gray area. You know, I mean, I had friends who had sex outside of marriage, but typically they were in a relationship for a long time, maybe dated for 2 or 3 years and got carried away in the back seat of the car. Doesn't make it any better, but there was that kind of gray area. Today there is no gray area. Your teenager, your young adult is going to fall into Group A or Group B. Group A is that group of students who I believe are stronger than my generation ever was. They have committed to purity and chastity. They know why they've done it. They're doing it, I call it loudly. They're loud virgins. They're not only personally committed, they're telling their friends they're committed and why they're committed. And we're raising an amazing, that group, Group A, is a strong group of students. And they're willing to stand up for their commitment to the value of chastity, and it's a new thing. My generation was kind of like, well, okay, yeah, I'm a virgin, and then kind of did it quietly and hope nobody found out. This generation is very strong. The students who are choosing chastity are choosing it. It's not like it just they're choosing it, and they know why. Then there's Group B that is choosing to not have that standard and to be sexually active. The problem is they're having multiple partners with absolutely no boundaries. The average number of sexual partners now for people under the age of 30 is 27.2. So the reality is, it's not just like I was in a really long-term relationship and we decided to have sex. It is I'm having indiscriminate sex with many partners. And so as a parent when you're raising kids, you kind of have to realize your child is either going to be in group A or group B.
My daughter has a friend who recently got pregnant, and it was pretty unbelievable. She said that a Jehovah's Witness knocked on her door, and she invited him in, and he's now the father. Like, what?
Oh, my, seriously, oh.
That's an example of group B.
Yeah, exactly. Our generation has trouble with that because it's not, even though there was promiscuity when we were kids, it wasn't to this extent. Parents don't get it, that their kids aren't going to just accidentally, you know, start to have sex with a boyfriend over a long-term period of time. It's going to be indiscriminate multiple partner sex.
I'm amazed at the people who need paternity tests because they're not sure who the father is. That one shocks me.
Well, when you're talking about 7.2 under the age of 30, that's going to end up happening. So, but you know, it's the hookup culture, and we throw those terms out there, but it's devastating. And what we've done is we've separated sex from relationship. It is now just an activity. And when you hear kids say things like, "Well, you wouldn't, you know, buy a car without test driving it. Of course, you have to have sex before your marriage." That's when you realize their view of sex has nothing to do with commitment and an expression of intimacy that exists. It is solely a physical activity to meet your physiological needs.
Thank you for sharing that with us. I loved having you on the show today. Is there any one message you want to give to people all across the country? What do we need to know?
Well, I would just encourage parents, you need to be the ones talking to your kids. And if you're not sure, you know, how to do that, part of it is you need the information. And so I always encourage parents to not only, I have some DVDs they could watch. My DVD called Parents Matter really speaks directly to parents and gives them really practical ideas about how to parent their teenagers and help them choose sexual purity. But then also, my talk to teenagers is called The High Cost of Free Love. We filmed it in 2012, so it's very up-to-date, has a lot of the things in it that we've talked about. But it's a message of sexual purity to the teenagers. And we need to make sure that this is in the hands of the teenagers we love, that they're seeing it, that they're watching it, that they're getting the information, and that they're receiving it in a way that they can understand it. So all of the materials that I have are available on my website, which is pamstenzel.com. And I would encourage those who are listening to get that material, share it with their own children, their teen friends, and then with the youth minister or, you know, whoever's working with youth at your church. And then we do have public school versions available for school districts as well. And then, you know, the last thing I would just encourage you is to consider, DVD is great, but nothing like live. And so I get a chance to travel all over the country. I speak to about 500,000 students live in schools and youth conferences all over the country. And if there's a chance your community could put something together, bring all of the churches together maybe on a Sunday night or a Wednesday night and have the parents attend with their student. These have been amazing events that have helped open up the conversation between parents and their teenagers and really given the teenagers an opportunity to hear a message that will encourage them to make the best choice. So we would love to help any community that's listening get the right information in the hands of your kids and encourage the parents to be the parent and be instilling these values with their kids as well.
Nice. So that's pamstenzel.com. That's spelled Pam, STENZEL.com. Pam, you've been so great. Thank you for sharing these insights with us. I'm encouraged by you. I love your message, and I believe that if we get it out, we're going to save countless people from a lot of heartache and heartbreak. Thank you for being our guest today.
Thanks, Cynthia. It was a privilege, really.
Will you come on again sometime?
I would love to.
Okay.
Sure.
We just barely scratched the surface.
That's for sure.
Okay, thanks, Pam. We'll catch you next time then.
All right, God bless. Thanks, Cynthia.
God bless you too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
This has been another edition of Homefront on Missouri Grassroots Radio. I'm Cynthia Davis and hope you enjoyed our program. Please join us next week when we offer another infusion of truth, honesty, and solutions that will grow people bigger and shrink government smaller. Thank you for joining us. See you next week.
That kid.